newspaperman meets such interesting people. They know the lowdown, now it can be told. I'll tell you quite reliably off the record about some charming people I have known. For I meet politicians and grafters by the score, killers plain and fancy, it's really quite a bore. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They wallow in corruption, crime and gore. Ting-a-ling-ling, city desk, pull the press, extra, extra, read all about it, it's a mess, meets the test. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. It's wonderful to represent the press.
The Media Project is underway, an opportunity for a half hour of commentary and analysis, and some days when we're really on our game, even some insight into the media issues of the week. I'm Rex Smith, the editor of the Times Union, here with Dr. Alan Shartok, the CEO of Northeast Public Radio.
Hello!
There you are. It's wonderful, wonderful to hear you. You sound chipper today. Hi, Chipper. We also have Ira Fussfeld here, the publisher emeritus of the Daily Freeman in Kingston, New York.
Mr. Rex and everybody, nice to see you all.
And you also, and Rosemary Armeo, investigative journalist, former UAlbany professor. What's on your mind today?
Impeachment.
Okay,
that's then. Nothing else.
Well, we'll get right to that because it is one of those topics that sort of takes over the media. Wow. This happens sometimes when every other element that you might be wanting to cover doesn't get attention. I remember after 9/11, our front page of the Times Union was all about 9/11 and its aftermath for six solid weeks. No other topic made it to the front page. We're not quite at that, but there is a lot of content, right?
And you did lead the paper the other day with impeachment, and I know we've discussed it here. You're loath to use wire copy on your front page, and there it was right across the top.
Well, yes. Actually, we have a new Washington correspondent who we use, a Hearst Newspaper's Washington correspondent who we share with the Connecticut papers. But yes, you're right. A national news, even on a paper that looks out for local news all the time. This is one of those that you just need to give, because I think there's such an appetite for it, right? People are just looking for this content. And the key question, I think, is what do you give people that they aren't already getting from somewhere else?
And what are you undercovering, if anything, as a result of the increased resources?
Mm-hmm. I was intrigued by some good coverage that has been coming out of this. I heard an NPR story by the correspondent David Wellner, in which he looked at the two explanations that President Trump has given for why he had frozen American military aid to Ukraine. And through good reporting, through assiduous effort, he basically exploded both of the president's explanations. And that, I think, that kind of fundamental reporting is still has a place, even when the overall story is visible to everyone by simply watching television in the morning, right?
You know, it's very interesting, Rex, to think about the blue states versus the red states in terms of what coverage is going to be given to a story like this. I mean, for example, if you watch CNN, that's a national network, so everybody gets the same. Whereas I suspect the Times Union, which did a terrific story on the governor, Cuomo, and what he had to say, it was terrific because you used my name in it. And I think each of these places is different, based on the fact that the people who live there have different sensibilities.
It is amazing to me how much the story has taken us over. We're completely consumed by it. The president was at the UN this week, and he had the Australian head of state at a state dinner. And, of course, whenever they were together to be asked questions, the reporters were all asking questions related to Ukraine and impeachment, and they were completely lost. The foreigners are like, what? What is this all about? To explain. And we know every little nuance of it, and many of our readers and listeners do as well. We're consumed.
Though to Alan's point about there being regional differences, there, of course, are philosophical differences in those media that wear their opinions on their sleeves. You know, Fox News has been putting forward a completely different take on this. I'm looking as we speak at a couple of screen grabs, one from CNN with the font beneath the anchor saying transcript shows Trump pushed Ukraine to investigate Biden. And on Fox, that same minute, 11:29 a.m., transcript shows Ukraine president appears receptive and does not appear to feel pressured. So these are two radically opposing views, really, based upon the same content. How is that possible?
The news conference with the president of Ukraine was also interesting. He's a young man. and look smaller than Trump. You know what I mean? Both physically and mentally and experientially. And he's saying, you didn't want pressure. You weren't pressured. Were you pressured? And to me, it seemed like he was pressuring him.
You're right.
But he went on, Trump went on, talking about a different point of view and saying, see, there's proof. I didn't do anything.
Well, what we've seen, what we are seeing now in real time, and I'm going to give Trump credit. I'm not sure credit is the right word. But from the outset of his entree into politics, he started with this fake news business, and he had laid the groundwork and has laid the groundwork for nearly 3 years plus the campaign time to, in effect, tell people don't believe everything you read or see or anything you read or see. And it's built to this point in time because now he has to rely on the hope from his standpoint that all of the negative commentary that's coming out about him is going to be disbelieved by at least his base, if not more than that. And this has all been a building block situation.
Not only that, Ira, it is so clear that he lobbies the press in his press conferences. He says, I don't want any questions about this thing. I don't want any questions. I want a question about the economics. I don't want a question about what's going on. So he's basically lobbying and steering right then and there.
It makes you wonder what the media response to the fake news charges ought to be. There's yes. one train of thought that we just ignore it, that we're not the story, just forget it and move on. And yet that has also, I think, played into his hands. It makes it look like we're accepting that he's right. You run a correction, he says, see, there's proof.
Right, they made a mistake.
Well,
right.
It also, as I think Rosemary has said in a number of times, it makes it all the more important that we in the press get it right. Because if soon as we get something wrong, we're going to hear about it and it's going to feed into the narrative that he's built.
Now, here's a question. There's a sense afoot, and some smart commentators have pointed out that this is actually the president, Donald Trump, reviving his playbook from 2016, in which he sullied Hillary Clinton and the media. Analysis is we're complicit in that, yeah. right? Because I think particularly of, I can't remember whether it was, anyway, one of the major network anchors who kept questioning Hillary, but what about the...
Yeah, it was Matt Lauer.
Matt Lauer, disgraced.
Yes, yes, of course. What about the emails? What about the servers? What about the servers? And, you know, I was actually in Iowa last week as we speak. There was a cattle call where there were 17 Democratic presidential candidates. And in a cluster of reporters, Joe Biden was asked by a reporter about this question of corruption, quote unquote, involving his son in Ukraine. And Biden pushed back. He actually put his finger in the reporter's chest and said, ask the right question.
I saw that. I actually do think the mainstream media has underlooked that story of Hunter Biden. That is legitimately open for coverage, and we've not done it. And the right-wing media, since early last year, have been talking about this. What about Hunter Biden? So that's a fault of the media, too.
It's a different story, though, than what is now being pushed.
I mean,
New Yorker did a great story on Hunter Biden that really took about 3 weeks ago, that took a full look at everything.
Exactly.
There.
I just read that. And the Kiev Post has been covering it,
the
too, which
Post.
Is now, and that's in English. Language paper, so you know we can have access. But where's the story in the New York Times or the Washington Post? You know, it should have been there. And Trump plays on that. See, you didn't cover
it. Provides him a smokescreen.
I was also going to say, Rex, to your point, that Columbia Journalism Review did a study saying the press is repeating the errors of 2016, we're emphasizing all the negatives of every candidate, every single candidate. So Trump goes to a news conference, a rambling kind of demented, to my mind, interview, a discussion yesterday, and says, ask me about the economy. Ask me about this good thing. That good thing, right?
Did you see the little anecdotal incident when Boris Johnson was asked by an American reporter, there have been calls for your resignation? And Trump said, that's a nasty question from an American reporter. And Johnson defended the reporters. Well, that's the sort of question I would be getting from a British reporter. So in real time, he sort of swatted Trump down. It was amazing.
I'd like to just talk for a second about the context of the two elections, the past one and the one that's coming up. In the past one, I think the press was much more ready to give a free ride to Trump and to say this is the right way to behave as reporters. And now with the 10,000 lies and the rest of it, it's a whole different ballgame, don't you think?
12,000.
Thank you for that correction, Rick.
Glad
See,
to help.
Fake news, Alan, you're there, because there's no difference between a mistake and fake news.
It could be a whole different ballgame, but what about if Americans don't care about disinformation? I mean, there is some question as to whether Congress failing to act in response to the president continually lying is simply a reflection of their constituents not really caring about it. Maybe the president has gotten away with this. Right?
Well, you know, this morning I saw a poll, I believe it was on CNN. I don't think they took it, but it was a poll that showed only 39% or something like that of the American people want to see an impeachment. So now the press may, in the way that it's playing the story, be taking a different view than that of the folks that were reading them.
We could talk about polls. We often do, Alan. I think that's a baseline poll, and you're going to look at that number as hearings are held, as discussions go forward, as more evidence comes out. Mm. I think that that'll change. The Republicans, the pro-Trumpers, have never wanted impeachment, so that number will stay very high. Anti.
Is that a thought or a hope, Rosemary?
No, that is a thought, and it's not even original. That's other news people have been looking at those, too, how the polling works.
But if we believe, as journalists, that our fundamental responsibility is to give people a true picture of what lies beyond their own experience, and that's my definition of our role, then what do we do when there is a lot of there are a lot of lies out there, a lot of disinformation, and our consumers don't really seem to care that much about it? They're willing to just go along with it. They believe that everybody is partisan, so whatever. We're not going to see things clearly anyway. Why bother? How do we fight disinformation?
Not only that, but Trump is just a great liar. I watched the press conference, and, you know, if you didn't know what he was saying was false, and many people do not, you'd say, well, what he's saying sounds perfectly reasonable coming from a perfectly reasonable man, right?
Yes, right you are. But at some point in time, the media has to balance a number of balls up in the air at the same time, one of which is covering this politics and covering Trump as fairly as they can, recognizing that not everything he says is a lie, but at the same time, calling him out when there is a demonstrable lie. And I talked not just about the print press now, but all of the broadcast media. And I was pleased to see, for example, that during the Trump press conference, MSNBC pulled out of it with Nicole Wallace saying that we'd hate to do this, but he's not telling the truth. And they decided in MSNBC not to turn their airwave over to a propaganda speech by Trump. So yeah. You've got to recognize that that's happening and not be afraid to pull out, which is to what we were talking about earlier. They did show his campaigns in entirety 2 years ago. I don't believe that will happen on most channels now because they recognize that you're turning over a bunch of lies to the American public and that you're not doing your job.
Well, it seems to me that the politicians and the press have something in common here. And that is, it's called doing the right thing, even though, as Rosemary just pointed out, you know, a majority of people may not agree with you. I mean, look, these politicians all took a look at the impeachment question. It's now reached the point where, as we speak, they've got enough votes to launch this inquiry. But the press has to do the same thing. The press has to say, you know, this is right. So we don't particularly care whether people are not going to like us for this.
To go back to a point, Ira, you made like, I don't know, 30 or 40, 50 minutes ago.
Half-hour program.
Yeah, right. See, it just seems that way. What Trump is doing, denigrating the press, setting it up to look like they're fakers and partisans, that's spreading. It's happening globally now.
Yes.
And the publisher of the New York Times was highly upset by that and said the American government used to be one that proudly protected citizens, and it does not do that anymore, which puts the media in a horrible position, not just as far as being believed, but as far as being safe.
It was a really good piece written by A.G. Sulzberger, the publisher of The Times, pointing out that this has been, as you said, an American mission throughout our time. He says, but in attacking American media, President Trump has done more than undermine his own citizens' faith in the news organizations attempting to hold him accountable. He has effectively given foreign leaders permission to do the same with their country's journalists and even given them the vocabulary with which to do it.
Well, he also points out that historically, even if the incumbent president disagreed or disliked his coverage, if an American journalist overseas got into a dangerous position and needed the help of the American government was there for him or her. And then Sulzberger provided examples of the current administration in effect turning its back on, we had one notable case, it's worth reading, I don't want to go into the whole thing there, in Egypt, where the reporter had to rely on the Ireland embassy to get him out of Egypt.
Right, right. Because the Trump administration's view was he wrote bad things about the government. They didn't like it. Of course, they're being mean to him.
And I don't know if they archive it, but Sulzberger met with Trump in his office quite a number of months ago. They played the tape of that on The Daily, I believe, their podcast. It's very much worth listening to because, in, among other things, Sulzberger confronted Trump. He said, this is dangerous what you're doing. And Trump gave him lip service and said, you know, well, I'll take a look at it. I don't think I'm doing that. But so it's not like he hasn't heard it from Sulzberger. What Sulzberger is writing now in this great piece is just an amplification of it.
So, group, I'd like to ask you this question. You know, it's very rare that you see Mr. Sulzberger or a publisher taking a public position this way. Is that a good idea?
This isn't an unprecedented situation, isn't it?
I mean, yes, it is. Yeah. Well, it was a rhetorical question, of course.
The press cannot win either way. I remember when, in 2016, the Washington Post was the first editorial that came out right after the conventions, far earlier than any newspaper had ever endorsed. And what they said was, do not vote for Donald Trump. He is a unique danger to democracy. That's kind of, that's hugely partisan, and it was unprecedented. And they thought, oh, wow, we're doing something great. We're saying what we really think, warning people this is our job. And that is the start. Well, not the start, but it's a landmark case of how biased the mainstream media is against Trump. And both are right.
Well, biased, but that's, now, wait a minute, that's the editorial page. You are citing the editorial page. Intentional. They have a right to be biased. I think the question is the news coverage biased? And I, unfortunately, because the Washington Post is the paper that is the collector of the lies, it is the Post fact checker, Glenn Kessler, and his team who keep that number of 12,000 lies. It makes us sound, we in the media, sound like we're biased just by citing the facts. And I know we're sitting here in a radio studio offering our personal opinions, and someone listening to this who is a great Trump supporter will say, well, look at you, editor of the Times Union. And,
yeah.
And that's true. I have a personal feeling that this is a great danger, that the president's lies are, in fact, inappropriate. But does that mean that we're not supposed to call out lies? You know, we've wrestled with this for years now, trying to figure out how to cover this unique individual, Donald Trump, because we've never had a political leader like this before.
First of all, I agree with you. Secondly, I want to go back to the question I asked, which you all ignored, to my great consternation. It's very unusual to see an agent, Sulzberger, give an opinion this way. And that gets right to your point, Rex, which is that because this is so unprecedented, some people are going to have to take unprecedented actions. And I, I have great admiration for his doing this. I think it's outside the way that it's usually done.
I agree. And these are not normal times. We have a president who is not acting at all like a president. He is attacking the media. That is not precedented or something that we see every day. And so it should be attacked.
Well, let me ask you a rhetorical question. If Richard Nixon had the benefit of there being an internet and cable news networks and talk radio to the extent that we have it now, would we not have seen the same thing out of him? Because
Absolutely. Because we
did see some of that out of him. We saw his press secretary, Ron Ziegler, on any number of occasions blast the Washington Post.
Dan Rather.
We know from the tapes what he was saying about the media behind the scenes.
And saying no Washington Post ever comes into the White House, as I remember.
Including covering his daughter's wedding. So the technology has changed. I mean, what we say now is accurate in that what we're seeing now is unprecedented. But I would argue that it's unprecedented because of the technology and the vast number of media people as opposed to the personality.
And more than that, though, Ira, because Nixon, for all of his horribleness, had a respect for legal rights and for constitutional norms. This is politically unprecedented.
Yes, I think you're right. Nixon, as a lawyer, actually, well, remember the words he said when he resigned, the constitutional process has been served. I will resign the presidency.
I don't
think that that's a phrase that would come out of the lips of Donald Trump. I don't think he's aware of the constitutional process. And I do think that also we have to approach differently his campaign, because while I think you're right, Rosemary, that there should have been some attention to Hunter Biden, that maybe the media looked the other way. Look, his dad was out of office and Hunter Biden is a young man with problems.
Right.
But the story that is now being peddled by Donald Trump is not a true story. The notion that there is a great deal of corruption that Vice President Biden at the time tried to squelch an investigation into his son's role is not true.
Correct. Correct.
And so the media is so far, I think, which is why I didn't mind Biden poking his finger at the reporter who asked him about corruption, because it is true that the question reflected a supposition that was not based on fact. And what Trump is doing is the same as he did in 2016, as he's arguing that his opponent is guilty of something as bad or worse than what he was doing,
right,
just kind of creating a constant fog and alleging that the media is guilty too, getting Fox News and party leaders to fall into line,
yep,
right behind him.
But not for a change. I don't agree with you, Rex. You know, I think while you didn't mind his putting his finger into the reporter's chest, I think it was a mistake on his part. I think it's always a mistake in terms of public consumption.
By the way, that was a Fox News reporter, the son of the Ducey, whose first name I don't remember, who does Fox and Friends every morning, which is Trump's favorite program.
Steve. Uh-huh.
It's a very, very partisan.
But when you lose it that way, it always appears to be over the top, I think.
Yeah, both sides really ought to remain much more civil than they have been.
Didn't Andrew Cuomo tear a page out of that book on this air not all that long ago when
he defended
his brother?
But his brother, too. It was a journalist, supposedly.
You know what? Well, for the brother, it was a mixed bag. But for Andrew, I think it worked. You know, I mean, different situations. In his case, I think it worked.
What's that? What worked? What did he do? I'm sorry.
I mean, he defended his brother.
Oh.
I don't think it worked. In my view, his ripping into Rex's newspaper and his other broadshots at the media are very Trumpian. And there is a segment of the population, even on the left, that cheers it.
That was terrible.
You know, there's
terrible,
one
terrible.
Other lesson in this, I think, for candidates, and Biden is learning it now. Hillary never did learn it and paid for it, is that you can't have privacy when you're running for president.
Right.
If she had said, I have pneumonia, I can't go to the 9/11 celebrations, she would have just cut out a whole lot. If she had talked about the email and the server and talking to other people, and she would have bypassed all that. And Biden ought to talk about his sons. It's compelling. Hunter is a disturbed young man, and that's not unique in America. He would win great sympathy with it. I don't understand why he's saying, no, I didn't talk to my son, and I'm not talking to you about it. You cannot have privacy and successfully run for president.
I agree with you.
That's hard, though, isn't it?
It's way hard.
Bring your family up.
I feel huge compassion, and yet, you know, when Biden was saying, I don't know if my family is ready for me to run, he said that in 2016, and this year he said, we talked about it, we're ready. No, they're not. I don't think they are.
By the way, if you're just joining us and you're not sure who we are, this is the Media Project from Northeast Public Radio. I'm Rex Smith. There's Alan Shartok and Ira Fussfeld and Rosemary Armeo. And if you want to share your thoughts, media@wamc.org, media@wamc.org, and we will give some time to those thoughts next show. You were about to say something, Alan. I'm sorry, and I interrupted you.
Not at all. It's a matter of context, that's all.
Ah.
You know, when Andrew defended his brother on the Fredo charge, hey, there were a lot of people who bought it, whether we like it or not. A lot of people bought it. Whereas when you put your finger in a reporter's chest and say, basically, shut up, there's a different context.
Yeah. By the way, you know, we've talked on this program about the value of live interviews versus having prepared packages where you have the opportunity to get both sides of the story. But the value of a live interview was shown, I think, in the Chris Cuomo interview with Rudy Giuliani, where Giuliani decomposed on set. It was just kind of amazing where he started flipping out and subsequently did the same thing, actually, on Fox. He went on to Fox later.
He went on with Laura Ingraham and started calling one of the other commentators a moron.
Yeah.
Shut up.
Yeah, clearly the guy is losing it. And that can be shown. That's one of the great values of broadcast. You actually get the exact words and you can hear somebody losing it or not if they're able to hold themselves together.
You know, by the way, Rosemary mentioned Hillary's brief illness. 20 years ago, her illness would have been met on the other side by, I hope my esteemed opponent gets
better. Recovers well,
gets back into the fight. And what, of course, the Trump people did was suggest that she was dying or she was debilitated. And is there a chicken and egg in that? Has that become acceptable because the politicians are just following the general coarseness that is part of our society now, or are they creating the coarseness?
I know Hillary made a mistake, and she played right into it. And she could have used the media as her friend in that case, and she did not.
There are so many. I mean, she won, as we've said many times, she won the popular vote, but she did not run a good campaign, and this is just one of the examples.
But a good campaign means working with the media and figuring out how much privacy to give up and all
smart.
That this being
it wasn't
civil.
Smart.
It is understandable that, and you know, I've been a political press secretary. I have been mad at reporters. I understand that we can really tick off politicians because we don't parrot what they tell us. They think we are unfair when we do stories that give credence to their opponents. And so it's really hard for them to want to cooperate with us, but not doing so is going to guarantee that they will not have their point of view reflected in a story. It happens on the local level, too. You know, I have a local business operator who was contacting me yesterday about, well, your reporter didn't include me in the story about my business. Well, you refused to speak to the reporter. You know, we're not going to. And so she wants to write a letter to the editor. You don't get two bites of the apple. You don't get to publish a letter to the editor disparaging the newspaper when you have refused to talk to the newspaper when we were trying to get your point of view in a story.
You know, I've been lucky to be able to interview Andrew Cuomo virtually every week for a half an hour. And every week he says the same thing. You've never liked me. He always says, you know, you've never liked me.
I think he's really effective, Alan, when he said, as he did yesterday,
I do.
I want my gravestone to say I took on my harshest critic and talked to him on a regular basis. That had power.
It took him a long time to do that, though.
Mm-hmm. And he's been doing it weekly.
Well,
but it took him a long time. But as you know better than I do, he wouldn't come on this station for, what, years?
Eight years.
He has different advisors.
Yeah,
he's
right.
doing weekly appearances on WNYC also,
right.
and now
yes.
and he's even doing talk radio out in Western New York. So I think he is recognizing, somebody has convinced him that he needs to be accessible and make himself available.
A lesson that our president never had to be taught. He, from the beginning,
right.
talked to the press all the time, everywhere, every person who
there
asked.
There you go. And at that point, we have to end the show because we've run out of time. It's so true. So sorry. And we hope you'll come back next week for more. Alan Chartok, Ira Fussfeld, Rosemary Romeo, and I'm Rex Smith. Thanks to our producer, David Gustina, and to all of you for joining us on The Media Project.
Men are such interesting people. It's wonderful to represent the world. Now, publishers are such interesting people. Their policy is an acrobatic thing. They claim to represent the common people. It's funny, Wall Street never has complained. Ah, but publishers have worries, for publishers must go to working folks for readers and to big shots for their dough. Now publishers are such interesting people. It could be prostitution, I don't know. Ting-a-ling-a-ling, circulation, ting-a-ling-a-ling, advertising, get those readers, get that payoff. What a headache, what a mess. Oh, publishers are such interesting people. Let's give free cheers for freedom of the press.